Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Monday, to get you through another crazy, wild, maddening day and weekend of news that we'll figure out together on the Jason Rance Show on AM 770 KTTH and the KTTH smartphone app. We got a lot to get to. It turns out that when you lessen standards, you get subpar applicants. And that is what's trending.
What's trending? National.
We can tell you that at least two of the five disgraced Memphis officers that beat Tyre Nichols to the point where he later died, they were hired after the department decided to relax its requirements. And they did this out of the equity movement. They did this because they wanted to hire more people who, quote unquote, look like the community. And so they had to change some of their standards to get a wider variety of applicants. The New York Post says that Tadarius Bean and Demetrius Haley both joined the department in August of 2020, 2 years after the department dramatically loosened the education qualifications to become an officer. Now, this meant you no longer needed an associate's degree or 54 college credit hours to join the force. You can get by with 5 years of work experience. Now, last year, we learned that the department lowered its standards again for the same reason. They wanted to get more recruits. They wanted more and more people to join the force. They were struggling. At one point, I believe they had just under or maybe right at 500 officers for the entire department. And so they were getting desperate. They needed to bring in more recruits. And what they did last year was nix the timed physical ability test. They cut college education requirements from 54 credit hours to just 24. And the department received, or revealed, I should say, that it was giving waivers for folks who had been convicted on felony charges. So, hey, felony drug dealer, you may join said force now. Now, is any of what I just said why these officers did what they did on video? No, that's not why, but it could have played a role in why two of them, of the five, reacted the way that they did. In that, if they were replaced by two veteran officers who were hired at a time where the department wasn't desperate for bodies, would that have altered the way Tyre Nichols was treated? Maybe. Maybe. Maybe not, but maybe. It is a valid point to be raised, one that too few in the media are raising. There is a little bit of irony in all of this, tragic irony. And we've talked about this on the show so many times. And even though it sounds like a scripted joke, I always do the same joke each and every time. We are told that the activist community demands, progressives demand, that a police department look like the community it serves. And I always say, why would that matter? When you call 911, do I want a gay Jewish cop to show up? No, I want someone who is qualified. I want someone who is qualified. Someone who has the training, who has the skill level, who has the experience, who has the bravery to come and respond to whatever emergency I have to be in the middle of. That's all I want. When my house is on fire, I want anyone who's a firefighter who's trained to come and help. Don't care what they look like. Don't care their religion. Don't care their gender. Do not care. And this is part of the reason why I do not care. Again, not because they are folks who happen to look like the community in which they're serving, but because there is a focus, almost seemingly exclusively, on identity. We hear it all the time. We hear it all the time. But it feels like we should be striving for a police department or a school or a radio station. We should strive for staff that's just good at what they do, not when we can check something off of an intersectional progressive checklist. Ooh, gay, check. Jewish, check. Male, minus 10 points. We don't need any of that. pushing aside completely the qualifications argument, completely ignore that for a moment. Did having a police unit that looks like the community come into play here? Was that a benefit? Or did it not matter whatsoever? Turns out in this particular case, it didn't matter whatsoever, did it? It didn't. We had a bunch of bad cops doing bad things. A bad cop is a bad cop. Like a bad teacher is a bad teacher, or a bad lawyer is a bad lawyer, or a bad accountant is a bad accountant. That's it. This should have nothing to do with race. It should have nothing to do with politics. Although I understand that is not the world that we live in. Most people look at what happened when they saw the video on Friday, and they reacted the way most normal people react when we see things like that. That's disturbing. How did that happen? What are the consequences? And because we had those conversations openly, even leading into it, what we saw over the weekend were not the kinds of mass protests and riots that could have happened very easily had this gone a slightly different way, had this unfolded the way the George Floyd issue unfolded. We were told going into it, this is going to be the worst video you will ever see. And as I said on Friday, one of two reactions to that. We either say it's pretty bad, but not the worst I've seen, or you're right, it was the worst I've seen. No one was going to say, well, it's way worse than you described, because they described it as the worst video you could possibly see. Number two, what did we know? We knew going into the release of the videos that the five officers not just fired, but charged with second-degree murder. All of them. Today we learned a sixth officer has been removed from the force, not charged. And presumably it's because of a lack of due diligence in the aftermath of the beating. And I imagine we might see even more of those folks because, again, remember Tyre Nichols, according to the reports and according to the video, was slumped over multiple times. They just pulled him back up instead of giving him the medical attention that he needed. And so because of that reality of the way that this was handled, and again, let's be honest, if those cops were white, the weekend would have gone a slightly different way, almost certainly. But because of all of those factors, what we saw over the weekend was, well, some marches. We got some marches. We got some folks who blocked traffic. There was a little bit of vandalism, but nothing much. I could argue there was more vandalism in Philadelphia after the Eagles game. So it wasn't as bad as people thought.
And I think this is setting an example. If you are that type of officer, you are not going to get away with it. You're going to be held accountable immediately.
Yeah. That was the case beforehand, by the way. That's Victoria Beach. She's with the SPD, African American Community Advisory Council. She was speaking to Cairo 7, as was Reverend Harriet Walden.
I stand in solidarity with the people in Memphis and all around the country because it is a sad day for policing. And especially on black officers.
So it's not a sad day for black officers, to be clear. It's unfortunate for policing because bad faith actors, she's not one of them, but bad faith activists out there will try to paint this broad brush. All officers are like that. Oh, really? Oh, really? Show me that tape. Show me that proof. We know that that's not true. We also know not that what's not true is that not all black officers act like that. A ridiculous position that some folks want to pretend is true. We're not going to allow a small group of bad cops define all police officers. The same way, presumably, folks on the left don't like to use a bad teacher to paint a broad brush of all teachers in the profession. That teacher who duct taped a special education student to the chair, is that a teacher that is a perfect representation of the entire field, or is that a bad teacher? Bad teacher. That's a bad teacher. But we see all the time when it comes to policing, activists on the left, and I'm not even saying Democrats, I'm saying activists on the left, like to define the entire forces all across the country, all departments, all agencies, all cops, all deputies, they like to be defined by the worst of the worst of the worst in their profession, which is, of course, unfair and just flat out false. Now, like I said, some marches here in Seattle, they decided to march in the middle of the street. That is what they do. It was annoying to the folks who got caught in traffic.
Get out the street. Y'all can go protest that sidewalk. I don't care. It's stupid. Get out the street. You got places to go. Y'all in the way. Out the way. Y'all weirdos. Like, come on. Like, this is weird. Get out the street. Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it peacefully on the sidewalk.
By the way, that was a black man. Why does that matter? Because it's mostly white people who show up in these groups. Antifa was out. They didn't do anything illegal beyond wandering in the middle of the streets, but we allow that in Seattle. The city allows that. But it's a bunch of white people who like to march and like to pretend that they're the white knights. They treat themselves as white knights. These are all heroes. Did you know that? You were there. All heroes.
Heroes. Every single one of them.
They showed up and they were fighting for, I'm not entirely sure what they were fighting for, but they were fighting for something. They were fighting for something. They scream out, say his name, Tyree Nichols. Yeah, literally everyone was saying the name. Everyone knows who Tyree Nichols is. We don't need the white knight to come forward and stand up for black people when there was a black dude you just completely ignored because he didn't like what you were doing. And now, of course, we get, you know, it's a little bit late to say Monday morning quarterbacking, but we're kind of getting that from a whole bunch of people who aren't very friendly to cops to begin with, talking about how we need to change policing. Yet again, we need reform. We just had a whole bunch of reforms. Didn't work. Made our country less safe. And arguably, it led to an environment in which we hire people to become cops who have no business wearing a uniform or having a badge. So that's what you all did, but now you want more power to make more changes. And thankfully, and surprisingly, this was a guest on CNN. He's a law enforcement, former law enforcement, but he now serves as a law enforcement analyst. His name is John Miller. And he had to remind Poppy Harlow this morning on their CNN morning show that no one watches that, yeah, y'all don't really know what you're talking about.
I think the New York Times this morning did an excellent job of explaining just what he was up against. Tyree Nichols was up against 71 commands in 13 minutes. That's a headline. And it ticks through the contradictory orders that were given by these officers of things that Tyree could not do.
Now, I'll let her finish, and I'll let her continue to read about the what was in the New York Times. But having seen the video, I already know what she's arguing here, what the New York Times is arguing, but she's saying is amazing, is disingenuous at best. What she is arguing is disingenuous at best, and she's about to get called out.
Like yelling at him to show his hands as they're holding his hands down, commanding him to get on the ground when he's already on the ground.
Very good.
Over and over and over again. How does that happen? Not by one officer, not by two, but five.
Well, I would first say that nobody at the New York Times has ever tried to handcuff somebody who didn't want to be handcuffed. And I would look at that tape myself a few times to see when they're giving these commands, his position is changing back and forth all the time. But the fundamental problem is they're not functioning as a team that looks like they've worked together before in a similar situation. They're not functioning as a team that has practiced, you know, an arrest and control. This was a full-on failure.
He went and took something that was an absurd criticism, not based in fact, called it out, pointed out that the people who are making these accusations have no clue what in the world they're talking about, and then he went into a valid criticism of what went down. They didn't look like they were part of a team. The way that they went up against the vehicle, to me, looked like they didn't get any training whatsoever on how to approach a vehicle. Now, I say that, understanding I don't have the context in which what led up to them going up to the vehicle the way that they did. But normally, that's not how cops will go up against a suspect. That's generally not how policing works. But again, I note that I don't have all the context. We certainly know that what they did once they got Tyree Nichols out of the car and they stopped him from fleeing, and he did flee. But after they stopped him, what I know is the way that they reacted was wholly inappropriate. It was wholly inappropriate. And I finally watched, because obviously we couldn't do three one-hour clips live on the radio. I watched it after the show. And some of what I said on air, it's the same thing. Okay, at the start, you have someone who is resisting arrest. You're going to use force. That is normal policing. And the force that they used initially was normal policing. But then it escalated very quickly. Then they stopped being police officers. When someone is handcuffed and you're punching them, yeah, that's not how it works. That is clearly an abuse. And they're going to suffer the consequences of that kind of abuse. But now we've got folks who want to take away another tool from police because of what happened in this instance. Which, by the way, what Van Jones complained about over the weekend on CNN was not even considered to be all that controversial.
They were spraying pepper spray into this man's face repeatedly. Pepper spray is a bear repellent.
Oh.
The ingredient is called capsaicin. Right. It's the same thing in hot chili. Imagine taking a hot chili, rubbing it on your eyeball. Multiply that times 100.
Okay.
That's what they were doing to him. The cops couldn't even stand the reaction they were having to the pepper spray, just getting glances of it. So you're pepper spraying someone, torturing them, and then, of course, you're going to put your hands like this. And then they're brutalizing him for not complying. In other words, they are escalating with their voices. They're escalating with the pepper spray and then punishing him for the human response he was having to being tortured.
So the way he talks about pepper spray is that we need to get rid of it. Pepper spray is a non-lethal tool that cops use to get someone to comply. Sometimes they misuse it, certainly. Most times they don't. But what he's arguing there, it's very similar to what Democrats in Washington argued two legislative sessions ago when they decided to just ban weapons with a certain caliber of ammunition. But what they didn't realize, because they don't understand what it is they're talking about, the size or the caliber of ammo does not reflect how dangerous it is. Beanbags, shotgun casings, they're different. They're different. And what they ended up doing was banning non-lethal weapons. They had to fix it. They had to correct it. They did after almost a year. But what he wants is now let's get rid of the non-lethal tools. Oh, okay. That's your suggestion in the aftermath of Tyre Nichols. I spent a weekend watching coverage and reading coverage and listening to coverage about what was going on, hearing a lot of people who just can't accept that there are bad cops sometimes and they do bad things sometimes, and what we end up doing is punishing them when they do that. This is a perfect example of this. But they can't. They have to look at it as political. They have to look at it through a CRT lens. They don't know what it is they're talking about. And they're only going to make the situation worse and, frankly, policing even more dangerous, not just for cops, but for the people they interact with. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The drug crisis.
There was another protest over the weekend in Lynwood. Unfortunately, this was, and I said this was going to happen, and it's an unfortunate reality, is that the state gave the thumbs up to the opioid treatment center / methadone clinic. It's going to be run by Acadia Health. They opened today. I don't know if they had any patients come in today or people they were treating today. But folks are obviously upset with what happened. And as Karen says with Safe Lynwood to Como TV, they don't know what's going to happen next.
Don't know the condition of those clients that are going to the clinic. They definitely need help, but this is, again, not the right location.
She's 100% correct. Unfortunately, there's always someone in a community who probably, frankly, doesn't even live anywhere close to this or have kids that go to any of the facilities nearby, like the Boys and Girls Club. But you always have a Lisa. That's her name in this case. And she spoke with our sister station, Cairo News Radio.
Try to remember, think outside of themselves. And I know it's a protection of...
Think outside of yourself. There are things that are so much bigger than us as individuals. And we have to think outside of ourselves. Yeah, I read it in a self-help book. I didn't actually finish the whole book, but I got to the chapter that talked about thinking outside of oneself. And I thought that, well, that's a good thing to remember that I can say in front of media if there's ever a camera or microphone in front of me. Just, you know, let's be selfless. I'm a hero. Because I think outside of myself.
Try to remember, think outside of themselves. And I know it's a protection of children, which I absolutely understand as a mother. But there are people out there that need help.
Oh,
and hopefully that this place can provide that. And that we'll see a positive effect on the community rather than negative.
I'm so silly. I forgot that there are people out there who need help. Which, of course, justifies putting a treatment center wherever it is they want to be housed. I'm so sorry. That's my bad. I did not realize that there are people out there who need help. I didn't know. Boy, did she set me straight. I should have, you know what I should have done? Think outside of myself. Had I thought outside of myself, I would have known better. So now, what does the community do? They lost this particular battle. They knew it going in, they were going to lose. The city knew the city was going to lose. They did it anyway because they care about their community, and they were basically putting people on notice as to them being the watchdog of their community, which is exactly what Matthew Patrick Thomas says needs to happen next. He was at the protest or the rally over the weekend. He's the King County Republican Party chairman. He spoke with Como.
The next phase and for this group is to monitor the crime, monitor the community, and if anything slips up, which I'm not, I think it probably will, then we have to be on it to shut this place down.
100%. You lost a battle. You didn't lose the war. Or do you lose the war and not the battle? It's one of the things you're supposed to lose, but the other thing you don't lose, it keeps you in the game, which now I brought up a sports reference, but you get what I'm saying.
They lost the battle.
But not the war.
Yes.
They lost,
I think.
They lost the game, but on aggregate,
yeah,
they still have
still
an
tied,
away
maybe.
Score, so
yeah.
It's still a tie, and we'll see what happens. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send a text. 1-800-465-8770 to Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Hope everyone had a great weekend. Don't forget, you can become a subscriber to the show if you're not able to listen 3 to 7 weekday afternoons. You can text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to our podcast. While you're there, subscribe to the Brian Suit Show podcast. I would appreciate it as he would. There is in Seattle under the Ship Canal Bridge, there is this dangerous homeless encampment. It is one that has been the site to many an illegal act. In addition to just being flat out dangerous, it is dangerous, the location. And the people who live there, not the most scrupulous of characters. And on Friday, there was another shooting. Not entirely sure it was a homicide. It might have been a suicide. I'm getting some mixed signals from some reports and from the police. It was originally reported as a homicide. They might be walking that back. I'm not 100% sure yet. But we know it was yet another incident reminding us how dangerous this particular encampment is and how people who live around it, they're also at risk. And they've been complaining to the city over and over and over again. Hey, can y'all do something? And they don't do anything.
They know about this encampment, and now someone's died. They didn't do anything about it, and now someone has died. So
yep.
How long are you going to wait to, like, take action? Whatever the action is, I don't know, but you've already let someone die because of your inaction.
Talking to Como TV, he is 100% correct. He is 100% correct. They did not act. They could have acted. They chose not to. Someone died. Whether that was a homicide or suicide, that would not have happened in that location had the city or the county or the state got involved. Now, the city says, well, actually, sir, with your attitude, you're very judgy, sir. We don't own this property. The property is owned by the state. Well, okay, you do have access to electronic mail and a telephonic device of some sort where you push certain buttons, and if you do it in the right order, it corresponds to a specific individual who might be like working at the state level, who might pick up the phone and be all like, hello, And you can be all like, hi, I work with the city. We care about our residents. And there is this dangerous homeless encampment under the Ship Canal Bridge. Can y'all do something about it? Now, in fairness, the state would probably say, oh, no, we're not. Because they don't care either. They're not doing anything. You know what their excuse is? Well, actually, sir, with your judgy tone, actually, this is the job of the King County Regional Homelessness Association. You see, they're working with the people who live there so that they can build a relationship. And then, of course, you go to the King County Regional Homelessness Authority and you're like, hey, why aren't you doing anything? And they're all like, hey, I was told about you. You're very judgy, sir. You're very judgy. I was told you were going to reach out to us. It takes time. Didn't you know? It takes a really long time to develop relationships with the homeless. And until they trust us, they're not going to get into shelter. Oh, okay. How long will that take? I'm not going to tell you because you're going to be very judgy when I give you the number. No, I promise I won't be judgy. Well, it could take 6 months, maybe a year and a half. What? I am judgy. I lied. They will wait as long as humanly possible before engaging in any kind of sweep because they don't believe in sweeps. So they just don't do them. And they keep sending people down there maybe once a week, maybe once every other week to connect with the folks who are living there. No pressure whatsoever. So nothing ever gets done. People end up dying. People end up suffering needlessly because we have decided to normalize encampments until the next tragedy inevitably occurs. Then at the city or the state or the county level, they come in and say, oh, you know, we care. We'll do something now. Depending on the location and depending on who's in charge, the bar of how many tragic incidents have to occur before they act is different. It is. The city, sometimes they'll wait until a murder. Sometimes they'll wait until the second murder. Sometimes they'll say, okay, that was one rape there, but only one. Do we really have to clear it out? Can we just wait? And then the second rape occurs, and look, okay, I guess we got to do something.
Someone gets killed. It's a sad day. It's been sad just watching the way, I mean, in some ways it works. There's an encampment there. Wow. They do their thing. We do our thing. It mostly works. I can tell it's not great living in general, so it's a sad thing to watch America turn into that.
Yeah, thanks for the hot take. It's not a great living environment. I got that. But even his comments, it normalizes it. It normalizes the encampment. Yeah, it's there. They're doing their thing. I'm doing mine. That's not how it's supposed to be. And then meanwhile, we have over the weekend, a bunch of activists got together to virtue signal, to tell everyone how compassionate they are. They care truly and deeply about the homeless. They're holding this vigil because last year, King County saw a record high number of homeless deaths, 310. 310 people died out on the streets, in a park, under a bridge. They died. They died as a result of living outside. They died because they live in a county, many of them in the city of Seattle, that permits them to camp out wherever it is they want to camp out, exposing them to elements, keeping them in vulnerable positions in which they end up succumbing to death. So this group called the Homeless, or they put out something called the Homeless Remembrance Project. And they are working, they say, to Cairo 7 TV to ensure the lives of the homeless lost on the streets, that they are not forgotten.
We gathered to do one of these vigils so that the person is not ignored and forgotten.
You don't even name the person. You don't even name a person. Here's the truth. Every single one of the 310 homeless people who died last year, every single one, they all had a name. Not a single person who's listening to me, myself included, the reporter included, the people at the vigil included, will not remember any name of anyone who died. Now, unless you were directly connected to an individual who was homeless who died, you are not going to remember any of the names. They will be forgotten instantly. I could tell you all the names. Ted, I made it up. Maybe it's the name of someone who died. You will forget that name in the next segment. You will forget the name. Because activists, a lot of the ones who show up at these vigils, they do nothing to get the people inside. I don't care what their names are. Don't care. I want them inside. I'll get their name afterward. People who died had a name. You didn't care then because you did nothing to get them inside. Oh, but now you know their name, or you pretend to after their death? Wow. I saw an image of this vigil, which like four people showed up to. One of them had a sign, stop the sweeps. Okay, well, you stopping the sweeps is responsible for one of the homeless people who died, but you know their name, so I'm sure you feel really, really good about yourself. We're supposed to look at a vigil like this and say, well, I mean, their intentions are right, I guess. Yeah, but they're sweet old ladies. Why would you criticize them for this? Because they're doing nothing to help the problem, and I would argue they're making it worse, and they seem to acknowledge that the problem's going to get worse. Here's a member of this group named Anita.
Unless there are some drastic changes, there are going to be more this year. It's going to be worse.
It's going to be worse. Take that passion, take that anger, take that sadness, and actually put it towards getting those people inside, which includes a strategy of sweeps. So again, pardon me for criticizing the old lady who cares deeply to the point where she's crying about deaths that haven't happened yet, but she knows will happen. She should be upset with the city and the county and the state not doing enough to bring people inside. She should be upset with herself or the person who's next to her with that dumb sign that says, stop the sweeps. You are part of the problem. You are the problem. And perhaps a coping mechanism is remembering the names of the 310 or the two that you remember at your vigil. How about we put you out of business so you don't have to hold vigils anymore? And we actually get the people inside. But the fact of the matter is, they're outside, they're living in horrible conditions. And a lot of them are dealing with a mental health issue that's not being treated, a drug addiction that's not being treated. Oftentimes, they commit crimes. And I know that this is shocking because I'm told that the homeless are just like you and me. They were just one missed paycheck away from landing out on the streets. They're not criminals. They're not bad guys. They actually all, did you know they have jobs? Really? Wow. I guess it is a housing issue. But it's weird because they also break into homes and cars. They steal things. They trade or sell for drugs. You guys can ignore that fact all you want, but that's the truth. But the good news is the next time you call 911 to report one of those crimes, you will get a text back with a survey from the Seattle Police Department. Como TV's reporting the SPD began a new process. It happened last Thursday. That will follow up 911 callers and some crime victims selling a fully automated text message or an email saying, hey, could you give us some feedback on how we can improve our services? Which seems kind of odd because I feel like all the feedback would be, you took a really long time to pick up the phone when I'm calling 911. The non-emergency number no one ever picks up. And I waited 32 hours before an officer was able to come by because you're so understaffed. I don't think we need a survey for that answer. I'll just give it to you right now. That there's no one's going to say, I was pleasantly surprised. I thought I was going to wait on hold for 11 minutes, but it turns out I only waited 10 minutes. That is pretty good.
So are they getting this survey before someone answers the 911 call?
No, this is after the fact.
Okay.
It's going to be at the end of the process. I imagine it's going to depend on the kind of crime. So, for example, if you're reporting a rape, something tells me they're not going to send you, or I certainly hope, they're not going to send you a 911 text, say, how'd we do? How'd we do in your time of need? I'm guessing this is going to be on lower-level nonviolent crime. That is my guess. And they say it's going to be certain categories, they say. So not everyone will get this. Como goes out and I guess does the survey for the cops.
If it's not life or death, you may not hear back at all.
Yep.
I know of someone that had their car broken into and reported it, and they pretty much never heard back anything from the police.
Yeah, not the cops' fault, by the way. They do not have the staff to respond.
We've had, unfortunately, people that have been dead on the street and we've had to dial 911, or we have people that are ODing and we have to dial 911, and the response is always quick.
Well, because you're not calling the cops. The dead person's going to be handled by a medic. That's fire, that sounds. For dead bodies, a cop, I guess, will show up at some point. But good to know. Good to know. When the person's already dead, people will show up quickly. In the process of being shot to death by some junkie who's holding someone up, steal a watch so they can sell it for drugs, might take a little bit longer for them to respond.
For good and for bad, or for better or for worse. I hate to use the word worse, but you know, I think the public wants accountability, so I think they would like.
Okay, that was useless. Thanks, Cuomo. That whole story was made better by the fact that they included the guy poorly edited at that. I'm going to assume that wasn't your screw up and it was theirs.
That was definitely theirs.
That sounded like a bad TV edit.
It was.
Because God forbid they give the guy an
extra
second.
I figured you would make fun of it as you are.
Oh my gosh. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send a text. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, I owe Ilhan Omar an apology. It turns out she didn't even know what a Jew was when she was using tropes against all Jews. I was actually pleasantly surprised. It's the Jason Rant Show. You're listening to the Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. When I screw up, I own it. When I offer unfair criticism, no, I do it in good faith. I don't knowingly offer bad faith criticism, but sometimes I get it wrong. And I owe Ilhan Omar just a giant apology. She did an interview over the weekend with Dana Bash, and she did not know that all of the tropes she used to what I consider to be attacks against Jews due to virulent anti-Semitism that she traffics in, it turns out that all of those tropes she didn't even know were tropes to begin with. It just so happened, it was just a coincidence that she used so many of them when attacking Jews.
You said anti-Semitism is real, and I'm grateful for Jewish allies and colleagues who are educating me on the painful history of anti-Semitic tropes. What did you learn?
A lot. I certainly did not or was not aware that the word hypnotize was a trope. I wasn't aware of the fact that there are tropes about Jews and money. That has been a very enlightening part of this journey.
So in other words, she's all like, I'm just an idiot. I'm not hateful. I'm just dumb. I've never heard of the Jews with money trope, even though it's the oldest, you know, historically bigoted thing you could probably ever say. She had no idea.
Hey, being dumb is a good excuse, right?
My God. Does anyone actually believe her? Because she was there with Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell, who definitely didn't say anything, but I might have stepped in and been like, okay, I know we're all three here out of a shared disappointment with Kevin McCarthy booting us off of our respective committees, but what she just said, I'm nowhere near that. Keep me away from that. Keep me away from that Jew hater. You're seriously going to tell me that you had no clue, no clue, no inkling? You've never heard of a cheap Jew. You've never heard that stereotype. You've never heard that insult. Have you heard of the insult or seen the insult of Jews with big noses? Or is that also, I thought that was complimentary. I like big noses. What can you say? Some might say I have a fetish. Is that what she's going to say next? My God. And does that work? If it works for her, there are going to be a lot of racists out there who are going to use the Ilhan Omar excuse. I did not know that was an anti-black stereotype. I didn't know. I had no idea that this was anti-Asian. The N-word is, oh no. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Oh, making fun of an Asian's eyes? Oh, I'm sorry. I had no idea. I thought that was normal. I'm very grateful for my black and Asian friends for teaching me the history of slurs, of bigoted statements and caricatures used against them over time. This is the first time I've ever heard of such a thing. I agree. It's kind of weird that I used all of the stereotypes into one over the course of, you know, a week and a half of tweets and emails and whatnot. But that purely coincidental, purely coincidental. I promise I'm not a bigot.
Let me ask you, Congresswoman Omar, about what Republicans are saying about you, that there is a pattern of anti-Semitic and other controversial statements that make you unfit to sit on, in your case, the House Foreign Affairs Committee. I'm told that Republicans presented a list in their meeting, in their private meeting this past week. Included in that list is that you said that Israel hypnotized the world. You said Israel is an apartheid regime, that politicians with pro-Israel stances were all about the Benjamins, which you very notably apologized for, that you support the BDS movement, which a lot of people think is rooted in anti-Semitism.
It is.
Compare the U.S. and Israel to Hamas and the Taliban. I want to give you a chance to respond to all of that, which they say is a clear pattern.
I did not know that Hamas was a terrorist organization. I didn't know. I had, and I thought that Jews just liked the phrase, it's all about the Benjamins. Haven't you ever heard of that? Next, you're going to tell me that if I quote Jerry Maguire or the Cuba Gooding Jr. character, it's all about the money. You're going to tell me that that's racist. Oh, it is? Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. I might have used words at the time that I didn't understand were trafficking in anti-Semitism.
Aren't y'all on the left the ones talking about microaggressions all the time?
Yeah, where's the word police?
Or aren't y'all the ones who talk about how there's an unconscious bias at play? Not with you, though.
When that was brought to my attention, I apologized. I owned up to it. That's the kind of person that I am.
It's, you know, sure, I cursed the Jews for bringing this up, and I, you know, obviously there's a cabal of Jews against me, especially in the media. But, you know, I apologize to them 100%.
And I continue to work with my colleagues and my community to fight against anti-Semitism.
Imagine sitting through that course where she's learning about it. You hold up like a little, you know how when you're learning a different language or you're learning a vocabulary quiz for studying for the SATs or something, and they show you a word and on the back of it, it tells you the definition and someone's holding it up. What does this word mean? And then they say, oh, imagine her. Here's an image of a Jew with a big nose saying, is this a racist caricature? Is this anti-Semitic? And she's like, I don't. No. And then you turn around and says, yes, it's anti-Semitic. Oh, gosh. I'll get it next time. I'm studying really hard. Are you studying hard to be more anti-Semitic? How are we not showing any progress? 1-800-465-8770 for your texts.